Sometimes it is found folded and tucked beneath the eyelid, but other times it is nowhere to be found. So where is it? Probably on the bathroom floor at home. A little anatomy lesson. There is nowhere else for it to go. Other commonly misplaced items that lead people to the ER: tampons, condoms, and car keys. Can you lose a tampon inside your body if the string comes off? This is a surprisingly frequent question, and often a reason women find themselves in the emergency room. Patients often come in either because they cannot remove the tampon or because it has disappeared and they don't seem to know where it went. Time for another anatomy lesson. The vagina is a potential space, not a hole or cavity inside the body. The walls of the vagina are normally in contact with each other unless something is inserted between them. When something enters the vagina, the body makes room for it. At the end of this potential space is the cervix. Therefore, there is no place for the tampon to go. It cannot be lost inside that small area, and you should be able to remove it, or it can be easily removed by any doctor. Often, we find nothing inside, and that means you probably forgot you removed it. Leaving a tampon inside too long can put you at risk for a serious infection, so don't be embarrassed to ask for help. Is it true that the tongue is the strongest muscle in the body relative to its size? Now, we are sure there are many possibilities as to why someone would need the answer to this question. We never asked our friend who asked this question why this was important, but surely she had her reasons. Some sources do agree that the tongue is the strongest muscle per size, but the tongue is actually made up of four muscles. The heart has also been mentioned, but since it moves involuntarily and is mainly an endurance muscle, it doesn't really get to the heart of this question. Bad pun intended. The sartorius, which slants across the thigh to the knee, is the longest muscle in the body. As for the strongest, there are two other candidates: the masseter, used for chewing, and the gluteus maximus. By gluteus, who knew that our asses were so strong? Another tidbit for you trivia geeks. Here are Billy and Lehner's two favorite ass vocabulary words. Callipygian, having beautifully proportioned buttocks. Steatopygic, an extreme accumulation of fat on the buttocks. Why do your teeth chatter when you are cold? The body usually maintains a constant temperature of 98.6 degrees Fahrenheit. At this temperature, the cells of the body work best. If there is any significant change in temperature, it is sensed by an area of the brain called the hypothalamus. When the body gets too cold, this center alerts the rest of the body to begin warming up. Shivering, the rapid movement of the muscles to generate heat, then begins. Teeth chattering represents localized shivering. Why do you have an appendix if you can live without it? The appendix is a small pouch off the large intestine. The wall of the appendix contains lymphatic tissue that is part of the immune system for making antibodies. Removing the appendix doesn't cause any harm because there are several other areas in the body that contain similar tissue: the spleen, lymph nodes, and tonsils. The spleen and the tonsils can also be removed. Here we go, IMing again. Goldberg: you are going to give me a little something to add to the appendix question. Why do you have one if you can live without it? Some expert Lehnerisms on vestigial organs. Lehner: God put certain internal organs in the human body for purely aesthetic reasons. They just look nice when the forensic pathologist opens you up. 4:05 p.m. Lehner: how do we know yet what all the vestigial organs are? A lot of the organs that seem crucial now may seem vestigial pretty soon. Goldberg, please explain to me what is so beautiful about the appendix. It looks like a little wet caterpillar. Lehner, it's so subjective, though. A little wet caterpillar is beautiful, vulnerable, bespeaking the evanescence of life and the unbearable limpness of it all. I'm sure at some time, somewhere, the appendix had its moment, its evolutionary 15 minutes of utility. Goldberg, what the hell are you bespeaking of? Lehner, there was probably some predator that only ate people without an appendix, so that gene flourished for a while. Speaking of vestigial, what other supposedly vestigial organs are there? Goldberg, the tail. 4:10 p.m. Lehner, wouldn't body hair also be considered vestigial now, since we don't live naked out on the primeval savanna? I try to live naked on an inner sort of primeval savanna, but you know what I mean. Body hair is surely some sort of atavistic throwback, too. What's the purpose of pubic hair or back hair or even hair on the head? Goldberg, hold on. I have to look up atavistic. I need a freaking thesaurus. Lehner, it's all economics. There's not enough of a service industry devoted to the appendix, so it's anathematized as vestigial. Hair's cool, what with the waxing industry and salons and shampoos and conditioners, etc. Goldberg, you know, I love the word merkin, but do people really wear those? Why would anyone really want a pubic toupee? 4:15 p.m. Lehner, the whole idea of a merkin is so great. I think this whole culture of plucked women is pretty perverse, actually. It's sexually infantilizing. Who wants a woman who looks like a 6-year-old down there? How big can an appendix get? Goldberg, I know, but by the same token, you don't want someone who looks like a yeti. Is that how you spell it? Lehner, a yentl? Yentl? Goldberg, no, the abominable snowman. Are you saying that Babs wears a merkin? Lehner, well, I know we're digressing a bit, but rather a yeti than a glabrous waxen thing. Streisand is famous for the merkin, made by the finest Venetian merkin makers. Goldberg, let's not digress. We can get back to the book. Lehner, from yak scrotal hair. Okay, back to the book. Are canker sores contagious? One of the great secrets of medicine, and one of the things that doctors aren't quick to admit, is that we often don't have all the answers. Canker sores are one of those cases. Canker sores, medically known as recurrent aphthous ulcers, are the most common oral disease and something that many of us have experienced. They differ from cold sores in several ways. Canker sores occur inside the mouth, while cold sores show up on the lips. Cold sores are caused by the herpes virus and are definitely contagious. The etiology of canker sores is still unknown, although scientists have spent a great deal of time searching for the answer. Studies have suggested that this inflammatory disease is a result of abnormal immune response directed toward the oral membranes. Several bacteria and viruses have also been investigated as the culprit, but none has been found to be responsible. What are goosebumps? It's all about the Erectoris pylorum. What, you say, are Erectoris pylorum? These tiny little hair erector muscles that contract and raise the hair follicles above the skin. These are goosebumps, or goose flesh, or chicken skin. What causes them? They start with a stimulus such as fear, cold, or the sight of yourself in the mirror after a night of vodka-induced debauchery. This causes the sympathetic nervous system to become activated. The sympathetic nervous system is responsible for the body's fight-or-flight response. This sends a message to the skin and activates those little muscles. What is really happening when my foot falls asleep? Saturday night palsy is a condition often seen in the emergency room, not a sequel to a John Travolta film. It is caused by the same mechanism that makes your foot fall asleep, but is a tad more severe. Saturday night palsy is caused when someone, who is usually really wasted, is unable to move an arm or leg in response to the pins and needles caused when a limb falls asleep. It can lead to temporary or even permanent nerve damage. Here's what happens in normal conditions. When pressure is exerted on part of your leg or arm, several things occur. Arteries can become compressed, making them unable to provide the tissues and nerves with the oxygen and glucose they need to function properly. Nerve pathways can also become blocked, preventing normal transmission of electrochemical impulses to the brain. Some of the nerves stop firing, while others fire hyperactively. These signals are sent to the brain, where they are interpreted as burning, prickling, or tingling feelings. It is these sensations, paresthesias, that alert you to move your foot. Shaking your foot releases the pressure, and nutrient-rich blood flows back into the area, and nerve cells start firing more regularly. The pins and needles feeling can intensify until the nerve cells recover. That's why it's painful when you try to wake up your sleeping limb. Persistent numbness or tingling can be a sign of certain medical conditions, and in those cases, you should see your doctor. Why do you get bags under your eyes when you are tired? Feeling exhausted? Wondering why you have bags under your eyes that make you look like Droopy Dog or John Kerry? Lack of proper restful sleep seems to cause dark rings for reasons not properly understood. The skin around the eye is the thinnest found anywhere on the body, and this thin skin allows dark venous blood to show through. Dark rings around the eyes are a common problem. They appear to be genetic and can get worse as you age and your skin gets thinner. Adequate rest, good nutrition, and overall good health tend to make the circles less noticeable. You can also wear sunglasses all the time. Why do you laugh when tickled? You definitely don't spend a great deal of time learning about laughter in medical school. I know that doesn't surprise you since physicians are such serious people. The closest they come to humor is the physiological study of laughter, gelotology. There's even a form of seizures called gelastic seizures that causes sufferers to laugh incessantly. Laughter is a complex process that requires the coordination of many muscles throughout the body. Laughter also causes an increase in blood pressure and heart rate, breathing changes, reduced levels of certain neurochemicals, and a potential boost to the immune system. So overall, it's very good for you. Researchers have attempted to decipher the purpose of laughter, and many believe that the reason for laughter is related to making and strengthening human connections, a kind of social signal. Studies have shown that people are 30 times more likely to laugh in social settings than when they are alone. Reports also suggest that the origins of laughter may predate human evolution. So what about the connection between tickling and laughing? Well, this tickling-induced laughter is actually a reflex. Scientists don't fully understand how this works, but because you cannot tickle yourself, the reflex seems to require an element of surprise. Why does sweat stink and stain? Have you ever used the expression, sweat like a pig? Think again. Pigs don't sweat. Pigs don't have sweat glands, which explains why they have to wallow in puddles and mud to cool off. As for us humans, we routinely sweat as a way of eliminating excess heat and maintaining a normal body temperature. The average person has 2.6 million sweat glands distributed over the entire body, except for the lips, nipples, and external genitalia. There are two different types of sweat glands, eccrine, and apocrine. These glands are different in size and produce different kinds of sweat. Eccrine glands are located all over the body. Apocrine glands are different because they are found mostly in the armpits and groin. They are larger and open into hair follicles. Though sweat is mostly water, it is the small amount of protein and fatty acids in the apocrine sweat glands that gives armpit sweat that wonderful milky or yellow color. It is also what causes it to stain. Sweat itself is odorless, whether it comes from the armpits or other areas of the body. The funk begins when sweat mixes with bacteria that occur naturally on the surface of the skin. This distinctive odor is called bromidrosis, foul-smelling sweat. Here we go, instant messaging yet again. Goldberg, I was going to add a New York cab driver joke to the why does sweat stink question. Any thoughts? Lehner, what's the joke? I love jokes. What's the stinky cabby joke? Goldberg, I don't know one, but the scents of a taxi are so rude. It's either that overwhelming air freshener or wretched body odor. Lehner, see? It's all economics. Cabbies won't run the AC, so of course they're going to stink, especially the ones who wear the Irish fisherman sweaters and the latex underwear in the middle of the summer. Air freshener is, to me, worse than the smell it's supposed to obscure. It just makes me think of what the person is trying to camouflage. So my mind creates an even greater fetid fiction. Goldberg, I don't know. It depends what scent you are talking about. The hospital has some particularly vicious scents that need covering, like butt pus and bloody stool, which they both sound like punk bands. Lehner, isn't the smell of sweat supposed to produce certain subconscious, or conscious perhaps, sexual responses? And what the hell is butt pus? Goldberg, like a pararectal abscess or a pilonidal cyst. You drain them, and the scent is horrible. Lehner, oh, that's not so bad. I've smelled that. I have a pilonidal cyst, a dormant one, though. Goldberg, you always were scent-obsessed. Lehner, I met a girl at Brandeis who also had one, and we soaked ours together. That's true. Goldberg, sitz baths. Lehner, fond memories of her. Goldberg, a sitz schwitz. Lehner, yes, sitz baths. We were young and idealistic. Isn't a pilonidal cyst somehow related to a vestigial tail? Goldberg, I don't know. Lehner, that's a fucking simple medical question, and your answer is, I don't know? Goldberg, it brings back the original point of this book. They never teach you the obscure stuff that people actually ask. 4:30 p.m. Lehner, my grandfather used to go to Hot Springs, Arkansas for baths, or so he told my grandmother. Goldberg, I can describe in detail the technique for draining a pilonidal cyst or talk about marsupialization when you sew down the sides. Nobody wants to know that. And then I get mocked by some pumped-up little writer who couldn't marsupialize his way out of a pepper bag. Not a pepper bag, but a paper bag. Lehner, do people ask you strange questions in the ER? Or are they too freaked out by having meat cleavers embedded in their heads to make small talk with you? You gotta explain that, dude. Goldberg, explain what? Lehner, what's marsupialization? Goldberg, you cut open the cyst and sew down both sides so it doesn't come back. You create a little pouch. Lehner, maybe I'll get that. I'll have the ass of a kangaroo. What is snot? Phlegm, snot, spit, boogers, sputum. All different varieties of the same thing. These terms are used to describe different forms of mucus, a slimy material that lines various membranes in the body, called, of course, mucous membranes. Mucus is composed chiefly of mucins, lubricating proteins, and inorganic salts suspended in water. Mucus aids in the protection of the lungs by trapping foreign particles that enter the nose during normal breathing. Mucus also makes swallowing easier and prevents stomach acid from harming your stomach wall. As for the different varieties, phlegm is one type of mucus. By definition, phlegm is limited to the mucus produced by the respiratory system, excluding that from the nasal passages, that is, what we refer to as snot, and that which is expelled by coughing, sputum. In medieval medicine, phlegm was counted as one of the four bodily humors, possessing cold and wet properties. Phlegm was thought responsible for apathetic and sluggish behavior, which is how we get the word phlegmatic. Boogers are less historical, a slang word for dried nasal mucus or snot. The presence of mucus in the nose and throat is normal. When you are sick, the mucus can become thicker and change colors. Color is not a clear indication of a bacterial infection, but persistent rust-colored or green mucus tends to indicate a more serious condition. For those do-it-yourself types, there are many ways to make home mucus to prepare yourself for a career in medicine. Here are two recipes. Ingredients: 1/2 to 1 pound of fresh okra, 1 to 2 cups of water. The less water you add, the thicker your mucus will be. Instructions. First, chop the okra into large pieces and place them in a saucepan with a tight-fitting lid. Then add water to cover and boil the okra, about 10 to 15 minutes, until it's a dark grayish-green and very soft. Turn off the stove and remove the lid. Let your slimy substance cool. Then strain the slimy mess into a bowl and discard the okra. Here's another one. Stir 1/8 cup of borax into 500 milliliters, or 2 cups, of warm water. It's okay if some borax remains undissolved. Allow the solution to cool to room temperature. In a separate container, stir 2 spoonfuls of glue, Elmer's, into 3 spoonfuls of water. Stir 2 drops of food coloring into the glue mixture. Then add 1 spoonful of the borax solution to the glue mixture. Stir, if in a bowl, or squish, if in a baggie. What are eye boogers? To answer this question, we called one of my smartest friends, an Ivy League-educated ophthalmologist who is a retina surgeon at a prestigious university hospital. He's the kind of guy who sends me Proust as a birthday gift. Doesn't watch TV, listens to NPR, so we go to him for the answer. Nothing. He tells me he will look it up. This just goes to show you that medical school sometimes misses the really simple stuff. So who has the answer? Honorary physician and expert on medical oddities Mark Lehner wrote about this malady in Maximum Golf magazine. Here, one pseudo-schizophrenic golfer hears 2 golf announcers having the following discussion in his head. Announcer B: Michael's a bit off center. I'd say less than 1 foot from the left edge of the mattress, and maybe 1.5 feet from the right rim. He's got his left arm tucked under the pillow. Announcer A: Which looks to me like a 245-thread count cotton twill shell filled with a 95% Canadian feather and 5% down blend. Announcer B: What's that in the corner of his left eye? A small emerald green particle. Can you make that out? Announcer A: That's the mucopolysaccharide secretion from the lacrimal gland that's accumulated and crystallized overnight, Bobby. Announcer B: Aye, gunk. My mama used to call that a sleeper. Announcer A: Well, we've got a lovely aerial view of Michael's sleeper from the MetLife blimp, Snoopy 2, cruising at 35 miles per hour at an altitude of 1,200 feet. Our thanks to Captain William Schmeckling and his crew for that shot. Absolutely splendid. Announcer B: Chris, he's got to get that out of there. What would you do in this situation? Announcer A: There is the very slightest breeze coming through the open window, but not sufficiently gusty to warrant any sort of major tactical adjustment. I'd use an index finger here, position it on the corner of the eye, precisely there at the lacrimal duct, and just ever so gently, ever so deftly, roll the particle out. Announcer B. You can't try to do too much here. Announcer A. Just get it out, actually. That's a job well done. Announcer B. Reminds me of when Ernie Els got an eyeful of sandpiper guano at the AT&T Pebble Beach National Pro-Am in 95. Played the back nine basically half-blind. One of the most courageous exhibitions I've ever witnessed. This eye gunk is nothing serious. While you sleep, a mixture of oil, sweat, and tears collects near the corners of your eyes. As the tears dry up, you get left with a nice little bit of crust. What are those little half moons in your nails? The pale half moon shape at the base of each nail is called the lunule. It shows where the hardening process is not yet complete. The American Academy of Dermatology provided these nail facts. Nails grow about 0.1 millimeter, or about 0.004 inches, per day. Fingernails tend to grow a little faster than toenails. Toenails are approximately twice as thick as fingernails. In general, nails tend to grow faster in summer than they do in winter. Men's nails usually grow faster than women's nails. Nails on your dominant hand tend to grow faster. Chapter 3. All You Never Wanted to Know About Sex. The party continues and has taken on a much more serene and romantic tone. Laner is on the couch with his Cinderella and is eating cocktail egg rolls off her webbed toes as they share his bottle of tequila. I am finally free from the body questions and at last can enjoy a drink myself. It seems as though the drama of the evening is over until I hear Laner shout, "Can anyone get me some duck sauce?" Laner is too impatient and his libido is obviously inflamed, so he is unable to wait for the hired help to procure the requested Chinese condiment. I cross the crowded room and find Laner conducting a focus group on homemade and alternative lubricants. As I reach the front of the group, Laner is now meticulously mixing exact proportions of Tabasco, runny brie, and a dash of his sacred tequila to form what he now calls his spicy sex bomb. I try to suggest that the Tabasco may cause contact dermatitis on the more sensitive parts of the body, but Laner chooses not to heed my medical advice as he leads his new special friend to his ad hoc laboratory. I am left behind to answer a sudden barrage of questions about sex. With anatomically correct dolls, Sex in the City, and internet porn, you'd think there'd be nothing left to learn. But there are still some questions people are afraid to ask until they've had that third martini. Is sperm nutritious? Or fattening? You are what you eat. In this case, it is somewhat true, as sperm contains important genetic material. But sperm, despite its important load, is not particularly nutritious or fattening. The average ejaculate, about 1 teaspoon, contains between 200 and 300 million sperm. Total calories? About 5. These calories are derived from protein, including enzymes and sugars, mainly fructose, secreted into semen by the prostate gland to provide the sperm with the energy to swim. Other good stuff found in semen includes water, vitamin C, citric acid, phosphate, bicarbonates, zinc, and prostaglandins, a veritable breakfast of champions. And we instant message ever onward. Goldberg, I still can't believe we ended up with this title. I still miss cocktail party medicine. Laner, I know. I can't even look at my own nipples anymore without blushing with shame. Goldberg, or if you had your way, it would be, is sperm fattening? That would be even worse. It hurts the neck to stare at your nipples for too long. Laner, I still love that title. 11:50 a.m. Goldberg, that would have meant the end of my medical career. Laner, to the contrary, I think it would have landed you a Surgeon General nomination in the Hillary Clinton administration. Can you get pregnant while you're having your period? In the 1970s, there was an after-school special on TV where two girls were talking about whether you could get pregnant from kissing a boy while wearing a wet bathing suit. That definitely isn't true, but the answer to this question is a little more complicated. The basic answer is yes, you can. First, not all bleeding is a real period. Sometimes a woman can have spotting during ovulation, and that would be a very easy time to get pregnant. Also, if a woman has a short menstrual cycle, about 21 days, then she could be ovulating on day 7 of her cycle. This would be the 7th day from the first day of her period, and if her period lasts 7 days, then it is possible that her period is ending just as she is ovulating. Confusing? It is definitely easier to practice safe sex. Do oysters really make you horny? Oysters definitely do resemble a certain anatomical part, but this doesn't make them stimulants. There are a lot of different foods and substances that are thought to be aphrodisiacs. Though there is no science to prove that any of them work, there are some theories on oysters. Oysters are full of many vitamins and minerals, especially zinc. Zinc controls progesterone levels, which have a positive effect on the libido. Other foods and products that are thought to get your mojo working include chocolate, strawberries, champagne, Spanish fly, animal crackers, but only if consumed during sex and dunked in Spanish fly. Big hands, big blank. When I was in Spain, I learned that the Spaniards believed that the distance measured from either side of your nose across the tip to the other side hinted at your penis size. As the owner of a rather large schnoz, I, Billy, was happy about this. But by the same measurement, Geppetto must have had quite a task making pants to hold Pinocchio, and Cyrano de Bergerac wouldn't have had to waste so much time writing love letters for others. Unfortunately, none of this is true. There also seems to be no evidence that hand size is related to the size of your package. When it comes to foot size, two urologists, in a study in the British Journal of Urology, measured the stretched penile length of 104 men and related this to their shoe size. They found that there was no relationship. As for other size issues, a small penis expands more than a big one during erection. And since a woman's sexually sensitive parts are in and around the outer third of the vagina, a big penis is not necessarily needed to satisfy her. Size doesn't really matter, ladies. Why do men wake up in the morning with an erection? You must be referring to nocturnal tumescence. Or do you mean Private Willie is playing reveille, or perhaps morning glory? There are many names for this morning starter, but only one good explanation for its presence. These erections are experienced in the REM, or rapid eye movement, phase of sleep. REM sleep is more frequent just before waking up. Erections can also happen at other times without any stimulus. There is no scientific reason why these spontaneous erections always seem to happen in the most embarrassing places. Parties, holidays, movies, weddings, funerals. Professor Laner has written extensively on the subject. The noted scientific research journal, Maximum Golf, contained this excerpt. Announcer B. If you're just joining us, Michael Neubauer is still in bed, but we've got an interesting development here. Announcer A. That's an erection, Bobby. That's a classic morning erection. You couldn't diagram it any better than that. The corpora cavernosa and the corpus spongiosum are engorged with blood and rigid. Absolutely paradigmatic. What do you think? Announcer B. I think you just have to give it a good whack here, Chris. Announcer A. Apparently you've got the ear of Michael Neubauer, because that appears to be precisely what he's going to do. Announcer B. I really like what he's trying right now. He's running this frenetic montage of actresses, models, and athletes through his mind. We've got Renee Zellweger, Nev Campbell, Liv Tyler, Catherine Zeta-Jones, Britney Spears, Salma Hayek, Foxy Brown, Nikki Taylor, Lil' Kim, Melissa Joan Hart, Charlize Theron, Sarah Michelle Gellar, Zaha Hadid, Benazir Bhutto, C-Ray Pak, Carrie Webb, Serena Williams, Anna Kournikova, Jelena Dokic, Mary Pierce. Now he's going way back. We've got some high school yearbook action. We've got some babysitter action. He's just totally scouring the memory bank here. There's one of his grandmother's Mahjong partners with the arm waddles. Announcer A. What are you trying to do in this situation? Announcer B. You're trying to get some erotic traction. You're looking for that face or that body that just clicks, you know, that you can fixate on, and then you try to get the voice, the incantatory exhortations. Michael, oh yeah, oh Michael, oh my God. Announcer A. How do you like his mechanics right now, Bobby? Announcer B. Excellent. He's got a very good rhythm going right now. Announcer A. Marvelous touch. You sense he has everything to gain and nothing to lose. Announcer B. One caution here, you want to avoid the computer and the books over there. Announcer A. I think we're reaching critical mass, Bobby. Announcer B. They don't come much better than that, Chris. Absolutely marvelous shot. Can people in wheelchairs still have sex? If an aroused male is unfortunately the victim of a spinal cord injury, the ability to have sexual intercourse depends on the level of injury. In men, there are normally two types of erections: psychogenic erections, which result from sexual thoughts, and reflex erections, which result from direct physical contact. Psychogenic erections develop from the nerves of the spinal cord that exit toward the bottom of the spine at the T10 to L2 levels. Generally, men with an incomplete injury at a low level are more likely to have psychogenic erections than men with high-level incomplete injury. Men with complete injuries are less likely to experience psychogenic erections. Reflex erections arise in the sacral area of the spinal cord. Many men with a spinal cord injury are able to have a reflex erection with physical stimulation if this pathway is not damaged. Is it true that you can break your penis? It pains us to say, but this is true. There is no bone in your bone, but you can rupture the penis, which is called a penile fracture. Sudden trauma or bending of the penis in an erect state can break the thick fibrous coat surrounding the corpora cavernosum tissue that produces an erection. This happens most frequently during sex. Don't expect to get a cast and crutches, though. This injury is an emergency and requires surgery to prevent sexual dysfunction. Ouch! Does masturbation cause stuttering, blindness, or hairy palms? As a doctor, there is a great deal of medical research to read. Piles of the New England Journal of Medicine and the Annals of Emergency Medicine surround the house. Rarely does this drudgery cause excitement unless you stumble across the April 7, 2004 issue of the Journal of the American Medical Association. As a young boy, you get bombarded by the fear that masturbation can cause stuttering, blindness, or hairy palms. Even if you escape these maladies, you can still be left feeling like a degenerate if you engage in self-love too often. Fear no more. In the article, Ejaculation Frequency and Prostate Cancer, you finally find out that whacking off may be good for you. This article states that ejaculation frequency is not related to increased risk of prostate cancer, and that the group with an ejaculation frequency of greater than 21 times per month had a lower risk of prostate cancer. Great! And no hairy palms. Does using a tampon for the first time make you lose your virginity? Dr. Billy's young cousin's friend asked him this one, another common question. There are many different opinions about what constitutes losing one's virginity, but most experts agree that women lose their virginity the first time they have vaginal intercourse. This question mainly revolves around the idea that only an intact hymen, a fold of tissue that partly covers the entrance to the vagina, proves that a woman is a virgin. It is possible for a woman's hymen to become stretched open during activities like playing sports or masturbating. Hymens have at least one opening that will allow menstrual flow out of the body. Tampons may stretch the hymen a little bit, but they don't usually stretch it open all the way. Either way, most people in the modern age believe that the condition of the hymen does not have anything to do with the definition of a virgin. Why do nipples become erect? Small muscle cells arranged cylindrically within the nipples are responsible for the nipple becoming erect. This occurs when they are stimulated by cold temperature or sexual arousal. What causes shrinkage? A penis whose flaccid length when stretched is more than approximately 2.5 standard deviations below average size for his age group is referred to medically as a micropenis. This is not a title that any self-respecting man wants to put in his bio, but perceptions of penis size can be deceiving. Cold air, cold water, fear, anger, or anxiety can cause the penis, scrotum, and testicles to be pulled closer to the body, thereby shortening it to micropenis lengths. Warm conditions, on the other hand, can cause the penis to lengthen. Although the size of the non-erect penis differs widely from one male to another, this variation is less apparent in the erect state. Even Seinfeld weighed in on the shrinkage issue. Some penis reference points. 1. The Kinsey Report, 1948. Average length of 6.20 inches, 15.25 centimeters, with a standard deviation of 0.77 inches, or 1.96 centimeters. 2. Study by Wessels et al., 1996. Average length of 5.1 inches, or 13 centimeters. 3. Other studies. Average length of 5.7 inches, 14.5 centimeters. Does circumcision lessen the fun of sex? The debate over circumcision has been going back and forth for years. Some American medical experts believe that all newborn males should be circumcised. The side in favor cites the decreased rate of urinary tract infections and sexually transmitted diseases among circumcised men, and the other emphasizes the pain and stress inflicted on a baby during circumcision. Others believe that the benefits of circumcision are not great enough to justify the possible complications of the procedure. In 1999, the American Academy of Pediatrics Task Force on Circumcision found potential medical benefits of circumcision, but decided that the evidence was not strong enough to recommend routine circumcision. But more important, back to sex. There are several studies found in urology literature that look at the effect of male circumcision on male sexual satisfaction. These studies found conflicting answers. The effect of male circumcision on the sexual enjoyment of the female partner was also examined in a study in the British Journal of Urology. The authors concluded that women preferred vaginal intercourse with an anatomically complete penis over that with a circumcised penis. Interestingly, the authors of the study also wrote and published a book entitled Sex as Nature Intended It. They also recruited some of their volunteers for the study from an announcement in an anti-circumcision newsletter. We mention this not as circumcised males, but as impartial interpreters of the medical literature. Interesting circumcision facts. The 12th century physician and rabbi Moses Maimonides advocated male circumcision for its ability to curb a man's sexual appetite. Male circumcision was introduced into English-speaking countries in the late 1800s as a method of treating and preventing masturbation. Male circumcision, the most commonly performed surgery in the United States, removes 33 to 50% of the penile skin, as well as nearly all of the penile fine-touch neuroreceptors. Does the kind of underpants men wear affect their fertility? Everyone has a preference. President Clinton revealed on MTV that he preferred boxers. Kramer on Seinfeld said, "I need the secured packaging of jockeys. My boys need a house." The question is whether or not there is any science behind making this decision. It was originally thought that wearing tight underwear could lead to infertility in men, as it may raise testes temperature to a point where it interferes with sperm production. In 1998, in the Journal of Urology, doctors Robert Mulkowitz and Bruce R. Gilbert analyzed semen samples from 97 men with fertility problems. Half of them wore briefs, the other half wore boxers. The researchers measured the men's scrotal, internal, and skin temperatures, both while the men were wearing underwear and again when they were going commando. They found no significant differences between the two groups of men in scrotal temperature, sperm count, sperm concentration, or sperm motility. The purpose of the scrotum is to maintain the testes at a temperature of approximately 5 degrees less than the rest of the body, about 93.6 degrees Fahrenheit. It appears as though the scrotum does its work whether you are in boxers, briefs, or free ballin'. So you can make your own fashion choice, and your sperm won't know the difference. Is there really a G-spot? An article in the American Journal of Obstetrics and Gynecology in 2001 called the G-spot a sort of gynecologic UFO. Well, the authors of that article may want to start readying themselves for space travel. That is, after they read this paper from Cairo University. The Electrovaginogram, study of the vaginal electric activity and its role in the sexual act and disorders. In this paper, the authors investigated the hypothesis that the vagina generates electric waves, which affect vaginal contraction during penile thrusting. They found electric waves could be recorded from the vagina. They also postulated that there was a vaginal pacemaker that seems to represent the G-spot, which is claimed to be a small area of erotic sensitivity in the vagina. So what is this vaginal Loch Ness monster? The G-spot is simply a small area located on the upper wall of the vagina, toward the belly, about 2 to 3 inches from the vaginal opening. The G-spot was named in honor of Ernst Grafenberg, a German physician who, in the 1950s, wrote an article that mentioned an erotic zone on the anterior wall of the vagina that would swell during sexual stimulation. There are various opinions on the best way to find the G-spot. Some women say that being on top during intercourse works best. Others swear by rear entry as the best way to hit the G-spot. Some even say that because of its location, a shorter, smaller penis may actually be more effective at reaching the G-spot. A clue to its location may be that some women feel a sudden urge to urinate when their G-spot is touched. Not surprising, since the G-spot is located right near the urethra. Do Kegel exercises really work? For those of you who have never heard of Kegel exercises, don't expect to see a class offered at your gym. Kegel exercises were originally developed as a method of controlling incontinence in women following childbirth. They're named after Arnold Kegel, the Los Angeles doctor who promoted their development in the 1940s. The principle behind Kegel exercises is to strengthen the muscles of the pelvic floor, or the pubococcygeus muscles. These muscles run from the back to the front of your pubic bone and encircle the openings of the vagina and rectum. Strengthening them helps improve the urethra and rectal sphincter function. These exercises are recommended for women with urinary stress incontinence, but many others do Kegel exercises for more fun reasons. Advocates believe that there are several benefits for a woman who exercises her vagina. They claim that it makes it easier for her to reach orgasm, makes orgasms stronger or better, and makes the vagina more sensitive. Can hot tubs make you infertile? Heat is damaging to the sperm and theoretically can affect male fertility to a certain extent, but there is no clear scientific evidence that implicates hot tubs. There may be a temporary reduction in sperm function after a soak, and prolonged repetitive use could cause problems, but none severe enough to avoid the occasional dip. Saunas do not appear to influence fertility either. A few studies have reported decreased sperm count or decreased sperm movement after sauna use, but in Finland, where saunas are most common, men have high sperm counts and no apparent fertility issues. Do men need sex more often than women? Men are often told that they have sex on the brain, and it appears as though this may be true. In one recent study in Nature Neuroscience, a team of researchers had 28 men and women look at erotic photographs while an MRI took scans of their brain. The subjects looked at arousing photographs of heterosexual couples engaged in sexual activity, sexually attractive nudes of the opposite sex, and at pictures of men and women in non-sexual situations. When analyzing the MRI results, researchers found that two areas of the brain, the amygdala and the hypothalamus, were more activated in men than in women when viewing identical sexual stimuli. So, do men have sex on the brain? Of course. And do bears shit in the woods? We really didn't need a team of researchers to answer this one. Can a man ever run out of sperm? What a nightmare! The well running dry. Could it be possible? The answer is no, but there is some bad news. A woman is born with all the eggs she will ever have, but a man's supply of sperm is renewed throughout his life. This sounds great, but researchers have found that men over 35 have more abnormalities in sperm movement and sperm with more seriously damaged DNA than younger men. It also has been found that over time, average sperm counts have been decreasing. The World Health Organization guidelines say a normal sperm count consists of 20 million sperm per ejaculate, with 50% motility and 60% normal morphology. This is different than 25 years ago, when the normal count was near 100 million. Are there any specific things that affect the scent of a woman? My wife's friend once told her that eating pineapple made you smell good down there. The friend had heard this from a call girl. It doesn't get more evidence-based than that. There is, however, no scientific research on this sensitive subject. People do believe that you are what you eat, so what you ingest, ladies, can affect the smell and taste of your womanly secretions. Foods that are often mentioned as having the potential to cause problems down there are asparagus, garlic, and curry. Can a woman ejaculate? There have been many claims about female ejaculation, but this was always dismissed as urination during intercourse. More recent evidence has found that higher levels of a compound, prostatic acid phosphatase, has been found in patients who claim to have female ejaculation. This compound is also found in high levels in male ejaculate and originates in the prostate. Researchers have taken an anatomic approach to the issue of prostate-like components in female ejaculate. They believe that if women ejaculate a fluid that is not urine, then it must be coming from someplace other than the bladder. The most likely source was thought to be the female paraurethral glands, or Skene's glands. Autopsy tests of Skene's glands have found substances identical to those found in the prostate. Some experts now call these glands the female prostate. So, it seems highly likely that some women can, in fact, ejaculate, but causing that to happen may be as tough as finding the G-spot. What is a hickey? A hickey is a bruise that forms when a person sucks and lightly bites an area on another person's body, causing the blood vessels under the skin to break. It is also a badge of honor for horny 15-year-olds all around the world. Chapter 4. Can I treat it myself? I look at my watch, and I can't believe that it is only 12 a.m. I answer the last of the sex questions and quickly scan the room to make sure that my path is clear to the bathroom. I see an opening and rush off, hoping to avoid any more questions. The door is slightly ajar, and I push it open tentatively to find our hostess, Eloise, sitting on the edge of the bathtub.